The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday. Sorry we weren't here yesterday, as we were thinking of our veterans and took the day off. The entire station had the day off. But what that means is we have an unbelievably packed Tuesday, because it being Tuesday, we'll have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, as we do every day. We'll have Fish on Friday on Tuesday, as we do every Tuesday. We'll have Richard Mulrooney on from the Memphis men's soccer team, because they're hosting the AAC tournament this week. They've got a match tomorrow night against FFIU. We're going to do that here just momentarily, get Richard to jump on. But we don't want to deprive anyone of the Fight Song Roundup. How could we possibly deprive people of the Fight Song Roundup? So we're going to have to figure out a way to squeeze that in too. An unbelievably busy day. Jeffrey, I hope you had a good weekend, even though, or maybe partly because your New York Giants suffered a loss.
That was a statement of purpose, Jeff.
You have said before, I believe your statement of principle was, losing to the Carolina Panthers is a fireable offense.
Correct. It
had, and your Giants went out and did it.
It was a fireable offense for Dennis Allen. I want to be clear. I don't want it to be a fireable offense for Dable. I don't think Dable's our problem.
And yeah, well, quarterbacks seem to be a bit of a problem there. Interesting, my Bills, we're not going to talk a lot of NFL today. My Bills are 8-2 in a year that was supposed to be a
reset.
They have not been 8-2 since 93. So all the great years that they've had recently, which have not ended in ultimate triumph, have never been as good as this year.
You want to apologize for still having the Jets heebie-jeebies?
No, I do not. I never apologize for my insecurities. Mm-hmm. I embrace them. I hold them. I display them
what
proudly.
What you felt about the Jets, you should have felt about the Dolphins.
Oh,
but the problem
is pathetic.
The problem is you, even when the Bills stink, they still beat the Dolphins. So you put them in a different category.
Yeah. So we got Mulroney's going to jump off with us here in a minute. We're going to do the Fight Song Roundup after that here in the first hour. Then Chris will join us. Then we'll do Fish on Friday on Tuesday. I wanted to start by addressing what I think are the four biggest things that happened in Memphis.
All right.
In the surrounding area while we've been away for these lollygagging for these 3 days, also honoring our veterans. One, you got Tiger Hoops at 2-0.
Yep.
That was big as they beat UNLV, second half team, very clearly. Two, the Grizzlies.
They might be storytellers.
Two, the Grizzlies. You got the good news, you want the bad news. And even maybe the bad news, I don't know, like Chris Harrington spun it as sort of good news, like from the isn't as bad as it could have been, but the Ja Morant injury news, the formal diagnosis and the update of how long he would be out dropped after our show Friday. So he is week to week. That was the bad news. But without Ja, they absolutely blast the Wizards and Portland over the weekend absolutely eviscerate them by a combined 69 points. So we got to talk about the Grizzlies. Things are going to get tougher now as they get ready to play the Lakers and then the Warriors and then the Nuggets. So things will get a little tougher. But we've got the Grizzlies to talk about. Memphis football, I included. Also 8-2, by the way. Memphis football wins Friday, and a scary situation was avoided. Carmelo Overton was, transported from the field to the hospital, but yesterday seemed to be okay. It was a spinal injury, but Frank Bonner from the Daily Memphian reports that he was in the facility walking around.
Well, that's great to hear.
So that was good to hear. And so we got Memphis football, but then of course we got Ole Miss football with an historic win. And it's another reason why it would be a travesty to not have the fight song roundup, to not play the Ole Miss fight song in the wake of that historic win over Georgia would be an absolute travesty. So those are the things we have to discuss before we get to Richard Mulrooney, before we get to the fight song roundup, before we get to Harrington, before we get to Fishman. Let's start with Ole Miss, Jeffrey, simply because it was historic. And then tonight we've got the playoff bracket will be revealed. The second playoff bracket will be revealed. They come in, start badly against Georgia. Lose Jackson Dart, doesn't matter. Backup comes in a critical spot, by the way. Drives him right down for a touchdown. And then the defense, which was the focus of all that offseason investment, paid off big time as they throttled Georgia 28-10. Amazing that after that early touchdown, having given up the short field and an early touchdown, only 3 points to Georgia the rest of the way. This a year after getting crushed by Georgia 52-17. And so now Ole Miss wins this one 28-10. We'll talk about the playoff implications and whether they'll be included tonight. I think it looks pretty clear that if they win the next two, one way or another, they will be included because other teams will lose along the way. But put that win a little bit in perspective, Jeffrey. How did it strike you?
I mean, I think it's the win that Lane Kiffin needed. He now has a signature win because his tenure at Ole Miss has been extremely successful, but there really hasn't been the signature moment win. It's been a beating, it's been beating a lot of the teams that you're supposed to beat, not really allowing the bad losses. I guess you could maybe say the Peach Bowl last year, but there's always this weird reality of what do bowl games mean anymore?
Yeah. Even Peach Bowls. Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
And you had the massive day where, he talked about it. The fans were there early. The weather was crappy. That was like, if you were looking for every excuse to not have the big day, like it was all there, but that didn't deter people. You get the big win in dominant fashion. And you kind of also, are validated by, all right, we've got to change the bodies here. We've got, like, to me, like, all that money they spent on the defensive side of the ball looks like it was money well spent because the final score is 28-10. Jeff, that thing could have been, like, 41-10. Like,
it was
a testament to Georgia's defense that was only 28-10 because they kept them out of the end zone a lot in the red zone. But, I mean, Ole Miss won almost every major category. They had more sacks, more tackles for loss, yards per play, more scoring opportunities. They ran the ball better. Like they almost doubled them up on yardage. I mean, it was a thorough butt kicking.
Speaking of spending money, they spent money to get that win with the defensive front, which was tremendous. And now they'll be spending a little money, $350,000 for the wild scene afterwards. When you had 100,000 of that is for the premature rushing of the field.
Yeah, I mean that was a tough scene. I mean, to me, like that was the only thing the fans' only big mistake was you got to know the clock, but
you got to know the clock. A little clock, poor clock management there.
Yeah.
Like Sean McDermott was in charge of the clock there. They 100,000 for storming the field before the game ended, and then 250,000 fine from the conference because it was the second offense. So Jeffrey, we'll talk more about this later, but in terms of the playoff, it is interesting You have the head-to-head win over Georgia, but you have the bad loss to Kentucky.
Yeah.
And you have an SEC that is absolutely loaded up. So I was looking at an ESPN projection today of how it might go tonight. And the ESPN projection had Texas at 2, Tennessee at 7, Alabama at 10, Georgia at 11, and Ole Miss the first team out. I don't think that is impossible. I think, but the good news for Ole Miss is Tennessee and Alabama play, obviously. One of them will lose.
Georgia and Tennessee.
I'm sorry, Georgia and Tennessee. I'm sorry, yeah, Georgia and Tennessee play. One of them will lose. It would be a second loss for Tennessee. It would be a third loss for Georgia. Honestly, like Georgia has some complaints this year because their schedule is just murderous. They've played 4 current top 25 teams, 3 of them on the road. They have wins over Clemson and Texas. Obviously, if they beat Tennessee, you know that they seem firmly in. How do you see it playing out right now, tonight, and then also long haul for Ole Miss, presuming that Ole Miss can win their 2 remaining games, which does not seem particularly difficult given that it's Florida and Mississippi State?
I actually think I'd be surprised if Georgia's ranked ahead of them, because while Georgia's resume to me still is better than Ole Miss's, when you have 2 teams with the same amount of losses, they have been very deferential to head-to-head. And it wasn't like this was kind of a fluky head-to-head.
I'll be interested. I think you're right. Honestly, we just saw them beat the hell out of them, right? Like, or beat them convincingly. If it works out, though, if ESPN sure. projections is correct, if it works out that Georgia is still ahead of Ole Miss, how much trouble do you think Ole Miss is in if, for example, Georgia beats Tennessee this week?
I think that's what you want. Now you run into the issue of, okay,
you want Georgia to beat Tennessee.
I think that's what you want, because if Georgia beats Tennessee, then Tennessee and Ole Miss are both, their path is the same thing, finishing 10-2, and both would have kind of bad losses. Both would have, the difference would be Ole Miss's bad loss was on the road. Ole Miss's bad loss was at home, while Tennessee's bad loss was on the road. But what we've also seen is they do kind of take note of how are you playing right now, and Ole Miss, to me right now, passes the eye test more than Tennessee does.
Well, and it's not only that. Honestly, Ole Miss, even in their losses, passed the eye test. Like in maybe not so much Kentucky, but if you look season long advanced stats,
yeah,
Ole Miss is one of the best teams. And presumably they should like Ole Miss looks like a team. Honestly, I wouldn't bet on them to win the national championship, but like they look like a team that could win a national championship Saturday.
Yeah, that's how good it was. Find me the team that's not going to have a home game. That's going to be, whatnot in the playoff, like I think that would be the team that I would pick. If you're saying like, all right, you got to find one of these teams that's going to be a double digit or whatever, one of the higher seeded teams that's got a chance, Ole Miss would probably be the pick for me.
All right, next we got Memphis football beats Rice. It is the nature of things now. Obviously a slow start for Memphis. Ended up not a great game for Seth at all. Kind of a shaky game from Seth, honestly. Running game was good. Get the win. 8-2. Could very well have back-to-back 10-win seasons for the first time in Memphis history. The stat that's been kicking around is since 2014 with 62 home wins. They joined Bama, Clemson, Michigan, and Ohio State as the only teams to do that. So if you do go to the Liberty Bowl, chances are good you will see a win, and yet they get no credit because of the conference. It's just the situation that they are in. It's the situation they will continue to be in. It is a lamentable situation. They did get the win, and that is that. Again, the good news was Carmelo Overton is okay. They got UAB. Saturday, a dreadful UAB team in the Battle of the Bones. That is the conclusion to the home schedule. And then, of course, they got the game against Tulane Thanksgiving weekend. Tiger Hoops gets the win over UNLV, 82-74. You mentioned Jeffrey. They're engaged in some storytelling yes. there at the University of Memphis.
Yes.
Because, yeah, they were down once again, found themselves 12 down in this game against Missouri. At one point, they were 14 and down. They came back to make it close in the half. And then in the second half, they were ridiculous. They shot 71.4% in the second half, 62.5% from three in the second half. And PJ, once again, magnificent, 29 points. In fact, John Martin, who was a doubter, let's be honest, he's so terrified of his the repercussions that he's taken this whole week off. Did you know that?
I did not. PJ Haggerty
has driven him to Jamaica mm-hmm. or somewhere. Yeah. He's taken refuge in Jamaica or somewhere. No, it was a previously planned visit. And to be clear, he wanted PJ to be a great player. He was a little skeptical whether he could do it in meaningful games. But so far, he has been absolutely lights out. Another 29 points. He can get to the rim. He can hit foul shots. He was terrific. Jordan was good, honestly. 11 of his 12 points in the second half, as he was a perfect 5 of 5 from the field. And so a nice start for Memphis. I mean, listen, these are not, you know, this is not Maui. We're going to get UConn, yeah. but those are two very credible wins that will go a long way towards, you know, someday hoping you get into the tournament. What's interesting to me is, given how people were burned last year, how quickly will they get back on if it is a successful non-conference schedule? And here's my view. I think they will. People can say, never again, never again, never again, never again. It's like people who say they're not going to fall in love again. People are in love with that team. Certainly, the Memphis Tiger fans are. And the nature of hope is such that even after these two pretty good wins, you already see some, kind of like this team. And that's a good thing. I like people's willingness to forget what happened last year.
Well, yeah, fans are gonna be wired to. You give them a little bit, they'll turn. You know what I mean? I think the problem is we don't know the context of either win. I think everybody can acknowledge they're not bad wins. Like it's not like
yeah, they're credible wins. They're correct. Credible wins. But yes, like what did the Arkansas win last year turn out to be? Nothing, you know, dirt, right? You know, there were a bunch of them. Missouri win last year. We were pretty excited Michigan. About it. And then, yeah, you know.
The Michigan game.
There's another
you
one.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, now the Clemson win, that was a good win. I mean, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's kind of, it can kind of cut both ways. I think there was a desire to want to declare, well, last year Memphis's non-conference, like it was smoke and mirrors. I disagree. Like I think the way they were playing everything, that was a good basketball team. They just collapsed and they fell apart and they weren't able to get it back on the rails. I think this year, before everyone kind of jumps all the way back in, it seems like it's going to be dependent on Maui. Like they come out and they beat UConn and Maui. Well, then everybody is just all aboard, like the Dr. Pepper hype train.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, so let's see. We've hit Ole Miss. We've hit Memphis football briefly. We've hit Memphis basketball. Good for them. 2-0. We got a lot to do. We got a lot to do today. We're going to talk more about the Grizzlies with Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. But I don't know, Jeffrey, how you feeling about it? So we get the news that Ja is out. With a posterior hip subluxation,
mm-hmm.
with also multiple associated grade 1 pelvic muscle strains. And if you pay attention to Jeff Stotts, who is the internet doctor,
yes.
and who wouldn't trust an internet doctor, right? Like, he points out that this is not, you know, normally you can consult other NBA injuries and see, okay, here's the other 15 that have been just like this,
yeah.
and here's what's happened. There are none. Like, that's good. In the NBA, in his database, they have never seen this before. It is a more of a football injury. Ryan Fitzpatrick had a hip subluxation without dislocation, which is what this one is, in 2021. I was a little terrified when I read this. He had surgery. But I do think the fact that they call it, and Chris writes about this in a piece in the Daily Memphian that's up today. You can read it over there. The fact that they are calling it week to week suggests that they don't, you know, they think it will be week to week, which is indefinite, but is, you know, we'll see him back in a couple of weeks.
You didn't,
I don't know, your thoughts. How did that news strike you?
It was a little bit of a bummer in the sense that it sounds worse than tweaking the hammy. Like, it does seem like it's a hip thing. And Chris pointed this out on Friday when he was with me, that oftentimes, you know, in the course of a game, it gets reported that, hey, it's a hamstring. But well, then when they go back and they look into it further, it's like, all right, it's actually probably hip or something. The fact that they didn't do the, all right, we'll reevaluate in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I thought that was a good sign.
Right.
But it did feel like it was a little bit more than, all right, this is just a tweak, soft tissue.
Yeah, this is one, you know, with Marcus Smart's injury or Desmond Bane's injury, I was kind of relieved by the week to week. This one I was not, only because I guess I thought it was just going to be a bruised hip. You know, and a day later, he was going to be fine. It's clearly, you know, a little more serious than that. So the Grizz go, have to play the Wizards at home, and then they play Portland. And let's see. So they're without Ja. They're without Desmond Bane. They're without Marcus Smart. They're without Vince Williams. They do not have a backup point guard. They've got Scottie Pippen Jr., and that is it. And they absolutely demolish two bad teams in the Wizards and in the Trailblazers. With the Wizards, it was Pippen with his triple-double, first career triple-double. He and his dad now, Scottie Pippen, were the first father and son to both have triple-doubles. Take that, Mike. Take that, LeBron. And Jaren was unbelievable in that game. Jaren back in the familiar position of being the only healthy starting Grizz, essentially, core Grizz, essentially, with 39 points, incredibly efficient, 4 of 9 from three, among other things. He was magnificent. And then Portland, they just blasted Portland. That was a disgraceful effort by Portland. And there you had Pippen with 17 points in 21 minutes. Jake LaRavia was really good. You got basically Jake and Kennard sort of handling ball handling duties. Luke Kennard with 11 assists in that game. Zach Edey now coming off the bench. He's getting into it with the Blazers, yeah, at the end.
Loved it.
Swatting away that
Loved
last
it.
Second disrespectful dunk. That was great. That was absolutely great. And so they're 7-4. They've won these two games against really woeful teams in incredibly persuasive fashion. I think we had said 7-3 after 10 or 8-2 after 10, and they're 7-4. So they're not far off where we had hoped they would be, but they're the wounded warriors. Marcus Smart could be coming back this week. Vince Williams should be back soon, but they got the Lakers tomorrow. Then they got the Warriors, and then they got the Nuggets. As good as they have looked, and as optimistic as I am about all the incredible pieces this team has assembled, which is really promising, I do not expect them to keep winning at a 7-4 rate with this cast, because I just don't. Scottie Pippen, Jake LaRavia, Jalen Wells are not. Can they handle the Lakers, the Warriors, and the Nuggets?
Well, to me, it's like if you can just win one of these, I would consider that would be successful. I think what's encouraging for me is, last year, when they got into this position, when you had all the injuries and you were having to play the back of your roster so much, they just completely melted. This year, they've been solid. Like, all I'm asking them to do is, hey, those games you're supposed to win, go win those games. And they've done that. And so they're not giving up ground at the rate that they did last year when they were falling apart with injuries.
All right, let's see. We're trying to figure out what we're going to do for the night. We're endeavoring to get Richard Mulrooney on the phone. He is the coach of the Memphis men's team. Again, they play FIU tomorrow night. We got the fight song roundup after that. Memphis men tomorrow night, men's soccer, they're hosting FIU, and if they win, they'll play again on Saturday. All right, we'll get to the fight song roundup next, but before we do, I wanted to bring in Richard Mulrooney. He, of course, is the coach of the men's soccer team here at the University of Memphis, and they have a big week because they will be hosting an AAC tournament game tomorrow night, match here in Memphis. Richard, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me. Thank you.
So the last I checked, y'all were 1-4, and it didn't feel like this was going to be this glorious season. You somehow incredibly turned it around, and now we'll be hosting tomorrow night right here in Memphis. Is that right?
That is right. And funny, 1-4, I've already blacked it out. I don't remember that at all. Saying that, no, it is true. Guys, with a slow start, but in saying that, they got, honestly, it wasn't me, it was the guys. We just sort of had a come-to-God moment after our last game at 1-4, and just figured, you know what, there's two directions this can go. You know, continue bad, or let's pick this up. And obviously, the guys chose the other, and obviously, if we go 6-2-3 in the last 11 matches, they chose to continue to fight and get something out of the season, and it's put us in a great situation.
This after winning an NCAA match last year for the first time. So how, just explain to the folks a little bit how it works, how the AAC tournament works, because it's different for the men than the women, right, in terms of hosting. And then my understanding is the championship game will be played here Saturday. Again, there's a match tomorrow night, which folks should go to at 7 o'clock. But then whether you're in it or not, Saturday it will also be here at Memphis. Is that right?
That is correct. That would be at noon on Saturday, and obviously that would be the winners of those semifinals from tomorrow. And the difference between the men and the women, we have eight teams in our conference. Not all the AAC teams have men's soccer, so hence the reason why it's a lower number. Six of the eight qualify for that. Three plays six, four plays five, and that happened last week. The one seed, which we were fortunate enough to get, we grabbed that. The number one host, hence the reason why we have the semifinals here tomorrow night and the finals Saturday, if we're in it or not. And obviously, FIU went through. They beat FAU, and that's who we will play tomorrow night, FIU. And in the other semifinal, you've got Charlotte, and you've got USF, who finished as the two seed. And that's at 3 o'clock before our game.
So, obviously, you had a magnificent year last year and then had the slow start this year and rallied. What was the key to it this year, figuring it out, not losing faith, and then grabbing the one seed?
Yeah, a couple things to it. Like I said, I think, you know, we brought in 10 guys at semester last year, and then 9 more from the transfer portal and all that, and that's just the world we live in. And it just took a little while for the team to form. The cohesionness, the unity, the camaraderie has always been there. So we were 1-4. We didn't lose the locker room. Like I said, it was just a matter of, guys, we just got to cut down on unforced errors. We sort of, you know, beaten ourselves a few times and just make a few more plays. You know, we did that. And then on the other side of that is just obviously just continue to believe. You know, we were out shooting teams, getting more crosses, getting more opportunities, and not just finishing opportunities. And, you know, like I said, in that fifth and sixth game when we started sort of turning it around, just started making more plays, got a win, gained some confidence out of it. And at that time is when we started our conference as well. So we were familiar with those teams. We started out 3-0 in the conference, which made us gain a little bit more confidence going into it and just finished strong with it. But at the end of the day, I think the team just stuck together knowing that, you know, we had some success last year, and that doesn't necessarily promise that you're going to take it into this year. But we returned a strong nucleus with the guys or whatever. And like I said, I think they just believe that, you know what, you know, we are better than what we're showing. We've got to make some plays here. And then at the end of the day, picked up a win, picked up another one, and you know, it was just it was a punch in the mouth, and I think the guys got themselves off the canvas pretty quickly after that 1-4 start, and that put us in a great spot to hopefully grab that ticket into the NCAAs. But a lot of work to be done against a strong FIU team, who was our last game of the season. We tied them at their place, and they're obviously coming in to look to win this as well.
So explain to me, because it's funny, we hear so much in football and particularly with Penny Hardaway and the basketball Tigers about the turnover. This exists in men's soccer as well. Obviously, you lose your leading scorer to Marshall because he transfers in the portal. How wild is it in men's soccer? And Are you all, I mean, I take it there are NIL opportunities as well. How is it functioning at your level?
Yeah, it everything that I believe that football and basketball have, we have too. We have the NIL. Do we have NIL at our disposal? No, we don't, and that's okay. Like I said, it's not nearly as big as it is in the football and the basketball world. Some schools still have it, but in saying that, I believe you can still win without that. You know, it may ask me in 5, 10, 15 years if it truly is getting so big and out of control that you just can't, you know, keep your players. And while we did lose our leading scorer last year, you know, he had reasons for it. You know, it wasn't just the soccer side of things or whatever. And we supported him on it. I hate to lose him, but at the same time in soccer, you know, an opportunity was presented for some guys. I was able to recruit some guys in. Honestly, this year we just scored by committee. You know, we didn't have a 10, 12, 15 goal score, and that's fine. We'd love to have it, but at the same time, you know, one of our leading scorers is a center back because we're good on set plays. You know, another one is a winger that is able to contribute some goals here or there. So while it does have some challenges, it's very similar to football and basketball with the NIL, but at the same time, with the group, yeah, you just, like I said, we brought 9 guys in the transfer portal, not just from the transfer portal in the spring, and then 10 true freshmen along with other transfers this fall. And it does. It just takes time, as you know, to create that chemistry, to unite or whatever. And it just, with this group, like I said, for the first couple weeks of the season, we weren't playing bad. We just got punished. Other teams were making plays. Other teams were punishing us for our mistakes. And then we just sort of cut those down. And, you know, lo and behold, you know, we're able to, we, you know, I guess the best way to put it was we started learning how to win some games. You know, like I said, in the beginning, we'd make a mistake and we'd get a tie out of it or a loss. And then we started figuring out, all right, you know what? Later on to figure out how to tie a game and then obviously figure out how to win. It just took some time for us to do that. And now we've just sort of gotten hot at the right time against a team against FIU who, like I said, knocked us out 2 years ago. They've always sort of had our number, but we were able to go to their place and tie and get the conference championship last week, a week and a half ago, I should say. And so they're coming in very familiar with us as we are with them, and we'll roll the dice and see where it takes us.
We're talking to Richard Mulrooney, who is the coach of the men's soccer team at the University of Memphis. Again, tomorrow night, FIU, 7 p.m. A couple of questions, then I will let you go. Obviously, sure. The new soccer facility, the Liza Fletcher soccer facility, she played for the women's team, but it's going to benefit the men's and women's team. I'm curious, what will it mean for your program?
It's huge. And obviously, sad situation. Obviously, we all know the story with that, but to be able to honor her with a stadium, it's great. And it's going to truly help both programs. Obviously, Brooks has done an unbelievable job on the women's side, has numerous championships. They had another great year. And then obviously on the men's side for us to be able to have a stadium. And we do. Like I said, it's not like we're playing at some park. You know, we don't have locker rooms or anything. We have what we need. But as you mentioned, with NIL, in terms of recruiting, this and that, it's going to help tremendously to finally have our offices and our locker rooms under one stadium, to be able to walk out there and just to compete with other schools that do have this stuff already. It's gonna be a game changer for us. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, our student athletes have worked their tail off to get something like this. And you know, again, it's not the only reason why we play. It's a privilege to just go out there and don the uniform, but at the same time, to be able to go in your own locker room and have a meal so you don't have to, you know, go rent another building out or, you know, find other facilities that you've got to maybe do a meeting or your video. We'll have all that stuff underneath one roof at the stadium, and it's just going to make things more efficient and hopefully make us better at the end of the day, and I know it will.
And then finally, Richard, you obviously were inducted into the Memphis Sports Hall of Fame a year ago, I think it was now, in not this most recent class, but the class before that. And I was struck by how emotional you were as you made your remarks and how much it had meant to you to be from Memphis, to be able to be the coach now at Memphis, and to be honored by this particular community. I don't know, reflections on that? It seemed to be a moment for you and a moment particularly connected to the city.
Yeah, I mean, hearing you talk about it, I'm still in disbelief that the city sees me in that way. I'm honored. Like I said, I play a team sport, so for me to say it was all me, no, I was able to play some good teams with some good players, and I was able to contribute at that. But just looking back at it, I'm from Memphis. I've always been proud of it. You know, when people would ask, you know, whether I was playing in San Jose or Toronto, hey, where are you from? I'd originally say Memphis, and they'd be like, oh, that's where you play. I'd be like, no, that's where I learned the game. It's just something that's always been, I've been proud of. You know, the state of Tennessee, Memphis, and again, we're not a soccer hotbed by any means. We've gotten bigger. Obviously, Nashville's got an MLS team. There's been other colleges in the state that have done well in the NCAAs. but for me personally, to see soccer grow in the state and specifically Memphis, it means the world to me. And to be able to be coaching at the University of Memphis is a dream come true. Like I said, it's Coach Grant took a chance on me, bringing me in 10 years ago. You know, I had a resume of a good soccer player, but as a coach, I didn't have that. And he brought me in, just taking a chance. And obviously, you know, I've been able to stay here and have some success. So it means the world to me. I think this is where my family's growing up. This is where I'm coaching. I don't want to be anywhere else. And this is where I believe, and I bleed blue. Obviously, go back to the basketball days of Andre Turner and stuff like that. And there's other tons of other things in Memphis that I can reflect on. But just to have this job and to show up every day, I wouldn't change it for the world, and I'm just blessed. I truly am to be coaching soccer in a city that I grew up and love.
Richard, thanks very much. Best of luck this weekend. Again, it's tomorrow night, FIU, 7 p.m., and then if they can win that one, noon on Saturday is the conference final. Best of luck. Thanks.
Jeff, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. If you're selling your house, John Kaiser would be the person to call. Phone number is 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. If you're selling your house, let's be honest. You want multiple offers. You want multiple offers because that way you will get the most from your house. It's kind of a tricky time. But Trudy was listing her house, and she heard us talking about it, honestly. That's how she heard about it. Called Josh Hysaw, and within 24 hours had multiple offers. Not saying guaranteeing that will happen with you, but Josh is terrific at what he does. He markets your home. Also, by the way, let you out of your contract at any time. That just speaks to the confidence that he has that he can get the job done. It's Josh Hysaw and his team at Keller Williams Realty. Call him at 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. We will do the Fight Song Roundup when we return, then Chris Harrington, then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It is a busy day on the Jeff Calkins Show. Back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show on a busy Tuesday. We weren't here yesterday, and so let's do the Fight Song Roundup. Massive win for Ole Miss over the weekend, which we talked about earlier in the show, 28-10 over Georgia. Highest ranked team ever to go down in Oxford. We got the premature field storming. We got the actual field storming. We have a magnificent game from the Ole Miss defense. And now tonight we will see where they rank in the playoff rankings, in the playoff bracket. Jeffrey, so to be clear, you think they will be in and Georgia will be out?
Yeah, I think the problem that Georgia is going to have is that both Alabama and Ole Miss
they're all going to be kind of in the same range. And usually when the teams are in the same range, they really, really use head-to-head as the tiebreaker.
What do you think of the possibility that if Ohio State destroys Indiana,
yeah,
and we'll get to the Indiana here in a minute, but if Ohio State destroys Indiana, you could have five SEC teams in?
I don't put it at a zero. I still think it's highly unlikely.
All right. Ole Miss wins, massive win, and obviously now they got Florida and Mississippi State left. I suppose possible to stub your toe.
If Lagway's healthy, I mean, Florida gave Tennessee a scare. I mean, if they're playing the kid Warren that they played on Saturday, there's a 0% chance.
Yeah, it's funny. Some people are saying, why in the world, you know, given that we see Texas eviscerate Florida 49-17, why did they give Billy Napier the vote of confidence? Well, that's why. They gave it because they knew they gave him the vote of confidence.
When they did for that reason, yeah.
Because they knew what was coming. All right, next. You think they're dead, and they keep coming back. Jeffrey, I believe Friday you asked the question. You asked the question whether LSU would be able to handle a running quarterback.
I did.
We had seen some evidence that they could not. Now we have seen absolute emphatic evidence they got no idea how to handle a running quarterback. Jalen Milroe, 12 rushes, 185 yards, and four touchdowns.
Boy.
They give up 311 yards on the ground. All Oklahoma has left is Mercer. I mean, Alabama has left is Mercer, Oklahoma, and Auburn. It looks like Alabama is back, baby.
They are back, and I mean, that's the question. It's like, can Milroe do that over the course of a three-game playoff? I don't know, but like, if it's just one game, he can be electric because it's not like, oh, he's just fast. He might be the fastest guy on the field.
Yeah. And so then at LSU, the best they can be is 9-3 for the third straight year for Brian Kelly. It's disappointing.
It's disappointing. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I this is kind of the problem. It's like, they'll turn to the recruiting thing, but the real question will be is the quarterback they have committed, which is supposedly new Cam Newton. If he winds up going to Michigan, I'm curious to know if that impacts his standing. But I mean, to me, it just seems like they're just going to kind of be a little bit unhappy with Kelly, but nothing's going to happen.
Right. Alabama is back. They will be firmly in, one would imagine, tonight. All right, next.
Thank God Michigan can't score.
We keep playing this fight song, Jeffrey, over and over and over again. Okay, this one was not as persuasive as other Indiana victories. It was, however, one of 10.
Absolutely.
And so they will certainly be in tonight. I do really think, and now they got the bye, and then they got Ohio State next. I think it's incumbent on them to stay close. I mean, obviously, if they could beat Ohio State, go knock yourself out and do that. If they stay close to Ohio State, then I think they're in.
As long as they don't get blown out, I think 11-1 Indiana's in.
Yeah. If they get blown out, and I don't, what's a blowout? 20? 17?
I think the question is, it's like, to me, there's a blowout is, you know it when you see it. Like,
do they look like they belong on the field with Ohio State?
Right. And to me, it's like, you know, if they're stay within a couple scores, I think they're fine.
I think that's right. All right, next. Don't look now, ladies and gentlemen. Colorado, it is interesting, and I think I've heard you talk about this on the afternoon show. This Colorado team, dramatically better than last year's Colorado team, not really getting the... Like, they're not the subject of conversation the way that last year's It's weird because you've got literally a guy who could win the Heisman. Travis Hunter, 9 catches, 99 yards, and played every defensive snap.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous. Shedeur Sanders was really good again, 30 of 43, 293 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. And because Kansas beat Iowa State, a clear path now to the Big 12 championship game. And if they win it, they will be in the playoff. Deion would be in the playoff. Obviously, BYU got another win this weekend, but not particularly persuasive. In fact, there are those who say, Jeffrey, it was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who would say, the Utah AD said that was stolen. And so Colorado is in, how about this, prime position.
Yeah, I see what you did
to
there.
Go to the Big 12 championship game and then into the playoff. What say you about Colorado, Texas Tech?
I actually thought this was one of their more impressive wins of the year because right out of the chute, Texas Tech had a pretty good plan for them, and you could tell Colorado was kind of having to navigate and figure it out. Once they made the adjustment in the second half, they come out, they put up 3 quick touchdowns, take complete control of the game, and that's the thing about the league that they're in. When there's not a huge separation between the teams, you're going into every single game with the best quarterback, the best offensive player, and the best defensive player who just happens to be the same player.
Travis Hunter is on a lot of mock drafts now, the number one pick in the draft. A corner, which is what most people think he is in the NFL, has never gone number one. But the guy is unbelievable. Right now, who's going to be on the stage in New York for the Heisman?
So I'm going to say Travis Hunter, Ashton Jeanty, and Dylan Gabriel.
Not Dylan Gabriel, not Cam Ward. He will not make it after this.
I think you can get 4. So we'll say Cam Ward.
I think 4. Yeah, and Dylan Gabriel. I think that's probably right. And who wins it right now? I think Travis Hunter wins it right now. Next. Well, that was it for Miami. A lot of close calls, and they finally lose to Georgia Tech. Had an opportunity to win it. Cam Ward could not get that done with the turnover. Georgia Tech ran for 271 yards. Like that's unbelievable. And so you have Miami, which was number 4 last week. I do wonder how far they'll fall, Jeffrey. Do you have thoughts on how far they'll fall? Obviously, you know, you could have a situation now where you can imagine, I don't know, could they be the team, could whoever wins the ACC be passed by Boise as a lower ranked
No, champion?
I think it's unlikely.
I think if you get the Big 12 champion that has a couple of losses, that's the path.
But that's the path. For Boise, it's to jump a Big 12. Whoever emerges in the ACC will be one of the 4 highest ranked.
I could be proven wrong, but what I thought Saturday meant, it meant less for Miami. What I think it meant more for was the ACC. What I thought Saturday meant was that the ACC is now just going to get the one team in. And basically, if Miami still wins out and wins the ACC championship game, they're still going to be the 3rd seed. Yeah. Like it's there's not a ton
That's right. There's not a lot of suspense there. Yeah. And if SMU wins, SMU will be the representative, which would be unbelievable for SMU. All right, we got to blow someone up, Jeffrey. It feels like we've done this a bunch, but given the developments, it seems appropriate. Mike Norvell, just the nightmare, just a nightmare of a season. 52-3, losing to Notre Dame.
By the way, those that just say you can just buy a roster, most reports say that their roster is $12 million.
Although that's a little bit like the old Yankees. Just because you spent the most didn't guarantee you'd be great.
Didn't mean that you'd be like 1-11.
Yes, it did. It did suggest you would not be. They're now 1-9. And
Jeff, their offensive team total was 7.5 points, and they didn't get it.
And they fired obviously the OC, the DC. and the receivers coach, which to me seems to indicate that Mike Norvell will be back, right? Like,
he was back when he got the new deal.
The new deal means that if they were, and it is interesting, because but for the new deal,
he would be fine.
There's Dion.
Oh, yeah.
At Colorado. He's going to lose his quarterback. But, you know, does he really want to stay at Colorado without Shador? And he'd be right there ready to make the jump. But Norvell's buyout is $63.8 million. That's for him. There will be more for his assistants, and then you would have to hire a new coach. And honestly, there's been all these questions about whether Florida State is as well-resourced as some other schools to begin with, right? I mean, that's sort of been a little bit of a question.
I think it's why they're so desperate to get out of the league.
Yeah. Holy smokes. What an absolute disaster. For Mike Norvell and that team, but it does feel like they will be back. I don't know. Like, some people ask, what could possibly happen if Florida State beats Florida? Could you then imagine that Billy Napier would get fired just because that would be so ignominious?
I don't think it's possible for Florida State.
I don't think it's possible for Florida State to beat Florida.
Yeah.
It's an impossibility.
Even with the Warren kid that played for, I think it's Austin Warren, who played for Florida, Jeff, he still put up 17 points. Like, they cannot score. I know Notre Dame has a great defense, but their team totals have been like single digits for almost every game.
We haven't talked about Tennessee. They get the win over the weekend. But they got Georgia next. Nico, injury situation, Bears watching. What do you make of that game, Georgia and Tennessee?
I mean, to me, it's Tennessee's chance to not leave it up to the judges. Because now, Nico has to play. Because the opening line I saw was 9.5. And I was like, ooh, okay. The one thing that we have seen this year that I think maybe people are a little bit slower to catch on to, it has become diet NFL in the sense of one of the questions you kind of have to ask yourself if you're going to bet NFL games is who needs the win more? And like we saw on Saturday, Ole Miss needed that win a lot more than Georgia did, and they played like it. Well, now Georgia is going to be in the position where they're going to need this win a lot more than Tennessee has, and they're finally back at home. And so are they going to use that opportunity to flex? I have my questions about their offensive line, though. Like, in the end, that left tackle was in hell against Ole Miss, and it's not like it's going to get better against
Tennessee. Tennessee's got a hell of a front, too. Yeah,
Not like all of a sudden it's like, okay, whew, man, at least we get to play Tennessee now. It's like, no, those guys are nasty, too.
So if Tennessee wins, that's that they're in, obviously.
I mean, Tennessee's playing for a chance to play for the SEC now.
Clearly. If they lose, if Georgia beats Tennessee, where are we in terms of playoff rankings in the SEC? Who's getting in? If Georgia beats Tennessee next week, who will be in the next Tuesday? Who will be in the next ranking?
All right. Texas. God. Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss.
Alabama, clearly.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to say, then you're going to be fighting with Texas A&M.
Wait a second. You just gave me five. So you gave me five, but who's going to be in?
So the
you're
ones that would be in, I'm going to say.
Texas is going to be in. Alabama is going to be in. Georgia would be in and Ole Miss would be in.
Correct.
Tennessee would be out.
Correct. I think then you're in that situation where you're hoping to God that it plays out that they will take five SEC teams.
So Tennessee really does, what's interesting is you say Georgia needs it more, but you're telling me that if Tennessee doesn't win this game, they're going to be out.
Then you do wind up in the situation of
they both 100% need this game.
Well, and then you could also maybe Ole Miss ends up being the team outside looking in because then you're now
trying to differentiate between
then that Georgia head to head though, that oh boy. I don't know if you can put Georgia in. Like, that's where it just starts to really get muddy.
That's where, honestly, if you hope that Ohio State beats the hell out of Indiana,
yes,
if you're an SEC team, and therefore you get five in.
Yes.
Which I do not rule out.
Oh, I don't rule
it
out.
Rule out. Tennessee, obviously, has UTEP left, and Vandy. Vandy, you know, we got the lawsuit now. Diego wants to.
He's going
to
challenge eligibility.
Year.
Yeah,
he's suing the NCAA, saying that junior college years should not count as eligibility. The argument is: listen, you have to go to a military institute, prep school, that doesn't count. Why should a junior college count? The answer would be junior college. It's
correct.
College, and you knew when you went to junior college that it counted.
Right, but we're going to find out, like. All it takes is one judge to say this is a non-compete,
and they never and the NCAA never wins.
Yeah, it just takes one judge.
All right, busy day today. We're glad we were able to get that, and we got Chris Harrington coming up next. He's got a piece up at the Daily Memphian, taking a deep dive at what has happened with the Grizzlies, their unique combination of injuries and blowout wins, and we'll talk to him about it coming up. Then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It is a busy, busy day. This is a great time to be getting engaged. Let's be honest. The holidays are a great time to be getting engaged, to cement your life together. And if you're starting down on that process, walk on in and see the folks at Robert Irwin Jewelers, like Jeffrey did. It is an easy process. Honestly, they make it a joy. And it comes because there is the meant-to-be guarantee. You got no pressure. Because if you buy a custom engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it for any reason. So it's honestly how confident they are you're going to love it and that she's going to love it, because you will love it. Plus all sorts of other stuff. Free ring sizing for life. Free jewelry spa service for life. That means buffing, polishing, ultrasonic cleaning. All of that. They've got great financing options, 24 months deferred interest, or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. More than four decades of experience right here in Memphis, Tennessee. They're not some Johnny-come-lately. They've been doing this for a long time. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, rijewelers.com. Back in a moment with Chris Harrington. It's the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Shake Your Hips by the Rolling Stones from Exile on Main Street. Shaking Your Hips, something John Morant cannot do at the moment.
Oh. Yeah, You got a piece up at the Daily Memphian, a deep dive into all of this, but let's talk about it a little bit. It's interesting. When you when the news came down that Ja was week to week, I think you tweeted out that maybe this was another, could have been worse. My reaction was, it's just about expectations. My reaction was different. I was relieved when we got that prognostication for Desmond Bain. But honestly, I thought Ja was just going to have banged his hip and would be fine. So week to week was a little bit of a blow to me. And as then you recount Jeff Stotts, this internet doctor, he sort of said some ominous things about it. What's your understanding of the injury and your level of optimism about his return?
Well, I definitely feared worse. So to your point, we just had different expectations when that injury report came out. I thought there was a we'll be reevaluated in a month, or we'll be reevaluated in 2 months. Like what just happened to Chet Holmgren. Chet Holmgren with the Thunder, where he fractured his hip, and he's going to be reevaluated in 8 to 10 weeks. I was worried about something like that. And so the week-to-week thing to me is better than I expected, but it was not the worst-case scenario that I feared. Although it is an uncertain one, I think, I don't know anything about it other than, what they put out there, what I've seen, reading the Jeff Stotts thing, so I don't have any inside information on any of this. But that injury report is, it's like multiple injuries, and B, one of them is, it's sort of odd when they call it a subluxation, but not a dislocation, but a subluxation sort of means dislocation. So it's a little unclear there, but to me, it sounds like a pretty significant injury and one that's going to take some time. Even in a best case scenario where it just heals naturally and he's ready to go, it's not going to be a couple days. So it seems to me like, again, just based on what Jeff Stotts wrote, the worst case scenario is that it doesn't heal the way they want it to, and then, you end up having to do something with it. I think that is not the team's expectation. And so we'll see, but I don't, I was on the podcast with Drew, and he said, you don't think Ja's going to play in the next couple games, do you? And I sort of took me aback, because I don't expect to see him in November.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, and there is this sort of, the Ryan Fitzpatrick, who Jeff Stotts referenced, he had a subluxation without dislocation, and they tried to rehab it, and then ultimately had surgery. So that's a scary prospect.
Yeah. So my assumption is that, of the guys currently injured, my hope is that Juju Jackson is the last one we see. Because we know that's not coming probably till January, right? But I think other than Gigi, I just sort of assume Ja will be the last guy we see. I think Marcus Smart might be back, tomorrow. Vince Williams is close to being back, it sounds like. But I assume we'll see Desmond Bain before we see Ja.
Okay, yeah, just let's play a fun game. Predict the order of return, Chris.
Marcus Smart, Vince Williams, Desmond Bain, Cam Spencer, which is got to be a return. That'd be an emergency.
Right.
Ja Morant, Juju Jackson. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh, my God. All right. So there's that. It was interesting, by the way. I had not realized till I read your piece, he's only dunked twice. And then
really,
the quote that you
attempted to dunk twice. He has not dunked at all. He's 0-2 on dunk attempts.
And the quote that you identified was such that it suggested that this is an intentional adjustment to his game.
Yeah, apparently no one else picked up what he was putting down, or at least picked up what I picked up from that. But put two and two together, it sounded to me like he was basically saying, even though no one had asked him that, he was sort of revealing that he's intentionally changed his style and he's not going as hard to the rim and not trying to dunk as much. And when you look at the way he's played, that's what it is, I mean, he's not going hard physically to the rim quite as much. The assist numbers are off the charts. He's hitting floaters and whatever, and he's had those two fancy layups, but they're not hard physically to the rim. And even that play where he got injured was going up for an alley oop. It wasn't quite one of those. It wasn't him driving into the defense, right? And I wonder, based on the play and based on that comment, it seems like maybe there was some sort of decision made because of the wear and tear of his body to sort of pull back a little bit on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the quote was essentially, I might as well be Duncan or something like this, whatever. He's right. Not getting, yeah. All right. So without Ja, without Dez, without Marcus Smart, without Vince Williams, without Gigi Jackson, without Cam Spencer, they absolutely blast two bad teams, the Wizards and the Blazers. Let's take those one at a time. The Wizards game, that was Scottie Pippen's triple-double, and it was Jaren Jackson being magnificent.
Yeah, 39 from Jaren, big night from him. Yeah, that was at home. It's sort of hard to separate the games. I think there's a common story there of the team's system is just clicking. Like, and by system, I don't just mean like the offensive system or whatever. I mean, just their whole style of play is just clicking. And we see this happen. Like this is something that happens almost every, not last season, but every good year under Taylor Jenkins, there'll be some stretch where everything sort of clicks, and because of they play so fast and they're so aggressive on defense, like it sort of clicks and they start running teams off the floor. And they'll have the stretch where they'll win like, you know, five or six in a row by like 20 points. You're like, oh my God, look at this. That's happened before, but it's always happened in like December or January, and it's happened with like better players. And so for it to happen right now with the lineup they have is to me really eye-popping. And I don't think it's strictly a function of schedule. That's a part of it. But, like, you don't beat a team by 30, by 45 or whatever it was because they're bad. That's a combination of they're bad and what you're doing is really working. And they have won by double digits in five of their last six games. So what they're doing is working.
The Portland game, Pippen had 17 in 21 minutes, and you had Luke Kennard with 11 assists. Laravia has been unbelievably good filling up the box score. But it gets to this point. So with Scottie, obviously they don't have Ja, and so Scottie Pippen is the junior, is the starting point guard, and they don't have a backup point guard. How are they surviving, and how do you foresee them surviving as long as Ja's out?
So most of the lineups they put on the floor with Pippen on the bench have had Kennard and Laravia both out there, either with Jalen Wells or John Conchar sort of between them. And Laravia and Kennard are playing really well, like as playmakers. But they're not playing anyone as a quote-unquote point guard, really. It is, and you know, the system they're running offensively, I think, is geared towards being less reliant on that. There's less pick and roll. And there's more like spread out, you know, move the ball playmaking. Obviously, they're super aggressive by getting a transition. So I think the system has sort of helped in this regard. And the team was sort of set up from the beginning to play without a point guard. Because if you go back to the summer, like the end of the offseason when they'd done with their transactions, even though they had Derrick Rose on the main roster and Scottie Pippen on a two-way, their projected 10-man rotation at full health did not include either of those players. Their idea was we can play other combinations and be fine with Ja on the bench. Now, those combinations in theory included Desmond Bane and Marcus Smart and Vince Williams, which you don't have. The idea of playing lineups that just, you know, have multiple ball handlers and don't have a true point guard, I think they always had that in mind that they could play that way. And it's really working right now. Again, will that work against Golden State with their defense the same way it worked against Washington and Portland if they're not letting you get in transition as much? I think that's a real question. But it's working for them right now.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. The no point guard lineup was, as you point out, it was supposed to include Dez and Marcus Smart and Vince. Instead, it's Luke would have been part of that too, but Laravia and Wells were not, and John Conchar was not. And like it's and here we are, they roll on. All right, I'm a little, they're 7-4, but now they got the Lakers. They got the Warriors, and they got the Nuggets.
Right.
I can't see how this is going to go well.
Oh, I think that those four games, if you give me 2-2, I'll take it. Yeah, even with both two of them being at home. No, I think it's bad timing to be without, you know, two of your three best players with that part of your schedule. With Denver, Jokic is suddenly playing like as well as he's ever played, which is about as well as anybody's ever played right now.
Right.
And the Warriors are so deep, and they're playing really well right now. And, you know, we'll see about the Lakers, but they're going to be at home, and so they're going to be favored in the game. So, no, it'll be a good test. It's not a welcome test, but it'll be a good test for how competitive they could really be without John Dess. Because they're going to have to try to be competitive without those guys, I would say, at least two or three more weeks.
And so their ability to muddle along in the West, and obviously, as you point out in this piece, and again, people can read it at the Daily Memphian, they are not the only team that has suffered injuries. They're not the only team in the West that has suffered injuries, and they're not the only team in the West that has suffered pretty debilitating injuries to the roster. I don't know if they can muddle along at 500 for two weeks here. Do you expect that's like good enough to stay in touch with everybody? Or with
so
the, with
it depends
the,
on what line
most,
you're drawing. Yeah. Depends on what line you're drawing. If your line is make the postseason, which is 10 deep now, there's nothing that's going to happen in the next 3 weeks that's going to take them out of that. Like literally, they could go 0-4 and they still get a shot. So they're fine as far as being in the mix for the postseason. You know, to be in the mix for the top six, which I think is the real goal, I think you got to get a win or two in this. But even then, like, it's a long season and it's early. And, like, I don't think, you know, I don't know if the sixth seed's going to have 55 wins. And so, I think they're in pretty good shape to be in the mix long term. I don't think the next two or three weeks is going to do anything to radically change, you know, what they can potentially become.
And looking around, just to review some of those, the Pelicans are without Zion and DeJounte Murray. The Suns, you got Kevin Durant out with a calf strain, I think it is. Aaron Gordon right. with a calf strain in Denver. Chet Holmgren with a fractured hip. And, of course, Hartenstein hasn't played at all for that team. The Clippers without Kawhi. And then AD has got the foot. And then I think the last one was an eye injury. But as you point right. out, as Bobby Marks tweeted out, Grizzlies still number one in missed games once again.
That was true when he tweeted it. You know, that could change with every passing day. It's sort of hard to believe it's not the Pelicans, but I guess, like, you know, you get credit for all the missed Cam Spencer games. I'm not sure.
Right. All right. And what do you make of the Zach Edey experience? He obviously moved out of the starting lineup. What did you think of that? And then has played well, including the fiery end of the Portland game.
Well, Spears, I can tell Taylor Jenkins has not been asked about the starting lineup change, even though he's two games into it. He's been asked about Yuki Tower and Karamura several times, but like, no one's asked him about the starting lineup change. So I'd like to know, like, what to me it seems fine, but I'd like to know, like, the team's rationale. I could see different possible explanations. Like, it seems like it's probably not an accident that it coincided with Ja Morant's exit from the lineup. Maybe you particularly liked pairing, you know, Ja and Edie. Maybe, you know, you didn't want two rookies in your starting lineup with no Ja Morant. You want a little bit more experience. You know, maybe you think Jaren is better offensively with Clark on the floor with him, and without Ja Morant, you need more offense from Jaren, so you want to elevate that. I think there are different potential explanations there, and they're all fine with me because it really hasn't changed the minutes. It's just different lineup combinations. And so, to me, the minutes you play is more important than whether you start or not. So I think Edie's been fine. Like, Edie's play has not really changed from going to the bench. He's shooting that three with confidence when it's right there for him. He's playing physically. I do think losing Ja hurts him more than most players because he's not going to get as many easy catch and dunk plays.
Right. And then Jaren's been terrific, obviously, right? I mean, that's been a...
Jaren has been awesome on both ends of the floor. And I wrote a little bit about that in the piece. But, like, he's second in the NBA right now in plus-minus behind, you know, a guy who plays for a team that's 12-0 where, you know, there's a lot of positive there. And his, you know, people point to, like, he's not blocking as many shots. But the defensive impact beyond block shots, like, if you dig into it, like, it's elite. And he's shooting a career high from two and from three. And, like, he's just been awesome.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You can read his piece on all of this over at the Daily Memphian. I have tweeted it out. He has tweeted it out. You can also catch Drew and Chris. They do a podcast over at the Daily Memphian, and it's terrific. And so I would urge you to listen to that as well for more Grizzlies talk. You will not read a better summary of where the Grizzlies are right now than in Chris's piece over at the Daily Memphian. We got Fishman coming up next. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday. Before that, I will tell you This is a great time to get to Oak Hall. And by the way, the hoodies and the quarter zips in collegiate colors, you got a bunch of teams here who are in it, man, like who are in it. And so you get your Ole Miss faith, and what better gift than a beautiful quarter zip in the color of your favorite team, whether it is the University of Memphis or Ole Miss or Tennessee or Alabama or Arkansas or whatever. They've got them the official collegiate colors. They also, of course, they got fabulous outerwear, beautiful sport coat. Sport coat just makes you feel better about yourself. So if you've got anywhere to go in this holiday season, have a beautiful sport coat from Oak Hall would be the way to do it. Spruce yourself up with a trip to Oak Hall. The clothes are stunning. I walk in there. I got my, I'm wearing my Steo down jacket, which is beautiful. Steo is a company out west that the only place it distributes in Memphis is at the world-class store that is Oak Hall. The clothes are beautiful and the people are the secret sauce. Go in and see our friends at Oak Hall this week. Going to take a break. Fish on Friday on Tuesday. When we return, it is the Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL rolls on. No better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. You can get started with $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. That's right. Place one $5 bet, win, and you get $150 in bonus bets. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's my last name. That's the promo code C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. And FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. It's safe. It's secure. You get your money fast. Must be 21 or older in present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Joined now by Charles Fishman. He is our man in Washington, D.C., author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for excellence in business writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. We did have Charles last week. We had the caller who, the listener, who said he had gone to the public library looking for books produced by the great Charles Fishman. They were a little bit hard to get a hold of, but he was able to locate some. He's read two so far, I think, The Walmart Effect. Love The Walmart Effect. So your popularity here in Memphis is growing, Charles.
I think he's only read one. He's only read one, and that was The Walmart Effect. But what was amazing was he heard you talking about this on the radio and got in touch. So that I thought that was very nice. How's my audio? I've got all kinds of
Your audio's fine. My audio's fine. Everything's fine. I do not have a list of the things we're going to talk about, so I guess we're winging it
I
today.
I sent you the list.
Since we
I sent
since
you
we
the
la-
list.
But
I sent you the list. You just, oh, no, there it is. But now you have the list. I typed
it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Don't correct me. I'll correct you.
When
since we last spoke, there was a presidential election, Charles. Donald Trump has been returned to office. I don't see this, a lot of other things on the list to get to, but your thoughts on the election
results. Lots of people talking about this, just every minute of every day. And the world is different than it was a week ago, let's be honest. There are a couple things that were interesting about this election. It's being portrayed as a red wave election, And there are some ways in which it was a red wave. We talk about the battleground states because of the ridiculous electoral college where you have to win certain states. There are only 7 states that mattered in the whole election. And Kamala Harris did worse than Joe Biden this time around in 2024 than he did in 2020 in every single battleground state. She got fewer votes and a smaller percent than he did. He won some of them. Harris did worse than Biden in every traditionally blue state as well. She lost ground everywhere compared to Joe Biden. She even got fewer votes than the abortion rights amendments that were on the ballot in 10 states. They were actually on the ballot in 11 states, I think. All of those, all voters who had the chance in the United States voted to protect abortion rights in every single state. In Florida, the amendment required 60% and it only got 57.5%. So it, quote unquote, failed there. But a vast majority of people, so in Missouri, they voted for Donald Trump and they voted to protect abortion rights. She underperformed the abortion rights referendum in 10 states. So people were really not persuaded that the Democrats could do this. All of that said, here's a couple more amazing facts. First of all, at the moment, 148 million votes have been tallied. It's estimated that the total votes cast this year will be 156 million. That's fewer than were cast in 2020. This was supposed to be a big turnout election. We heard all about the advance voting. I talked about the advance voting with the early voting with enthusiasm. In the end, fewer people voted this year than in 2020. And Joe Biden got 81 million votes. Donald Trump won't get more than 77 or 78 million votes. So in the end, this was not a huge turnout election. And interest kind of fell off. And if just 340,000 votes had been changed in 3 states, Kamala Harris would have won. 340,000 out of 150 million. That's literally 3,000
percent. I saw the stat that Donald Trump will win this popular vote. He's winning the popular vote, which is, he didn't when he won last time. When he was president last time, he didn't win the popular vote. This is the first time he will have won the popular vote. But he will have won the popular vote by less than Hillary won the popular vote president. Hillary won the popular vote that year, and Donald Trump's victory over Biden is less than Hillary won the popular vote. But it is still a hell of a rebuke for the Democrats. And I have a theory, Charles. I have a theory that it's your fault. Because here's the truth. On this segment, for a better part of a long time, you have been telling people that the economy is great, and which is honestly what the Democrats have been doing, and what that is doing it for those people who are at the grocery store or at the gas pump, or trying to live in America who don't have money. Those people don't feel like the economy is great, and it feels like they've been gaslighted by Democrats. They obviously, and the truth of the matter is, you look around the world, and whoever was in charge during inflation whether it was conservatives or liberals, and that's true in France, in Japan, in New Zealand, in England, whoever was in charge during the period of inflation was voted out. And that is what happened here, because people you can tell people all they want that the economy's great, but if they themselves feel like they're paying, you know, three times the price for eggs, they're not hearing it. And I do think that in the end is what carried the day.
I think it's what carried the day. I tweeted out a couple of thoughts about this, and you and I are just going to disagree. I don't know whether it would have mattered, but Joe Biden is a terrible storyteller. He's not a persuasive speaker. He really wasn't a persuasive speaker 10 years ago, a little choppy, a little meandering and anecdotal. You know, no offense to anybody, talks about his dad every, you know, growing up in Scranton every time. Give me a new story. And during the presidency, as we all agree, his storytelling ability deteriorated. And the White House never came up with a good way of talking about the economy. By every measure, even including inflation, the U.S. economy is crushing the entire rest of the world. When Donald Trump was president,
But people don't live relatively. They know that eggs are three times the price. They don't care if they're four times the price in France.
Eggs aren't three times the price. I buy eggs every day. But somebody tweeted back at me that there are kind of two economies. There's a national economy. We were petrified of the economic dominance of China. China's crumbling right now. China has no economic dominance. We did that in the last 4 years, 6 years. We have emerged from the pandemic in part because of the things that both Republicans and Democrats agreed to do during the pandemic to support people and businesses. We have emerged stronger than every economy in the world. The stock market's at an all-time high. Okay, not everybody has money in the stock market, but if you have any kind of retirement accounts, you are, in fact, better off. And somebody who tweeted at me put it perfectly. There's a national economy and there's a kitchen table economy. And that's a great way of explaining this bifurcation between. It's easier to get a job than at any time in the last 15 years. You know, wages are up, and wages for the people who make the lowest 25% of wages in America are up more than the richest. That never happens. So, but it isn't a mirage how people feel. I buy milk, I buy eggs, I buy gas, and I pay attention. Unlike you, I actually pay attention to the prices of those things. And so I don't know that it would have mattered, but Donald Trump is a world-class five-star storyteller. He gets up there and makes his point over and over again with humor and imagination, and the Democrats didn't do that. But it's certainly a rebuke, but my point was to say the idea that this was going to be an overwhelming turnout election turned out not to be true. Lots of other things turned out not to be true. Not as many people voted this year, even though there were more eligible than 4 years ago. And as has been the case in the last few elections, a very small people voting differently could have changed. So it's not this red wave in the sense of the truth is that Donald Trump will win by 1.5 percentage points.
I mean, you look at what Ronald Reagan won by, and I think every state but one, right? That is a red wave.
Biden beat Trump by 7 million votes. Trump will beat Harris by 2 million votes. So it's a very divided country. Let's hope that President Trump finds a way of governing for everybody. That's all. But there you go. Anyway, I just thought there was some
oil production is next on the list. What do you want to say about oil production?
The fact that Harris underperformed all of these categories is kind of amazing. I just saw a chart this morning from the chief investment officer of Charles Schwab, which is one of the places people who have retirement funds store their funds, Liz Ann Saunders. She's really good. It was a chart of oil production since the end of 2019 for Saudi Arabia and the United States. Saudi Arabia, of course, quote unquote, the king of oil, the kingdom of oil, one of the organizers of OPEC. Every single day of the last 5 years, the United States has produced more oil than Saudi Arabia, not even close anymore. We are the world's leading oil producer. We are right now, and for the last year, the new head of the EPA for Trump said yesterday they're going to unleash oil and gas production in the United States. Well, oil and gas production has been unleashed. We produce more than we ever have. And unfortunately, the world is now consuming more oil than ever. In this year, we will consume more oil, all-time record coal. Good economic performance, but that's, you can see everywhere that what we really need is to drift over toward the solar and the wind. But there you go.
Yeah, it does not feel like that's going to be happening in the next 4 years. Costco, we have an urgent food recall. Absolutely. What's happening with Costco?
After the Boar's Head, literal worst event, which killed 9
Fiasco.
People.
Yeah.
And the popularity of Costco, particularly on this show, I thought it was important to alert everybody to this urgent Costco food recall. 80,000 1-pound packages of butter, 80,000 1-pound, the four sticks of butter, both sweet cream, unsalted, and salted, have been recalled. If you use a pound of butter every 2 weeks, 24 a year, that's 3,000 years of butter. It was recalled for the following important flaw. The label doesn't say that it contains milk. If you don't know that butter contains milk, you're in trouble. So you can return your flawed butter. The butter's perfect.
How about do this? Do this, though. I'm a bit of a DIYer, Jeffrey. I call you Jeffrey twice.
You know,
DIYer. That's a do-it-yourselfer. What I would do is walk over to your fridge. If you're home, you can do this now. Get a Sharpie, walk over to your fridge, and there on the box, write, and Charles has beautiful handwriting, you could use it, write, contains butter. And that way you don't have to take it back to Costco, return it, anything else, and your butter will now be, and your butter will now, contains milk, I mean, your butter will now be safe to consume, because the label says contains milk on it.
Updated,
there you go.
Just in case people aren't paying that close attention, what is butter made out of, Jeff?
I would say it's probably made of milk.
It's made of milk. You just take the milk and you churn it until it's butter.
Orange juice contains oranges. There's a lot of things that we're going to have to address given all of this. That's preposterous. All right.
Exactly.
Why is there a U-shaped skyscraper on my list?
I just thought this was fantastic. There is an architecture firm called Oyo Studio. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. O-I-I-O. That has designed and proposed a skyscraper for New York City that would literally be U-shaped. It would have two legs. It would go all the way up, curve around, and come all the way down. To be built at the base of Central Park, 57th Avenue. So it would face Central Park from the south, looking north.
So it's like the St. Louis Arch, but it's a
It would
skyscraper?
Be like the St. Louis Arch, a perfect comparison, except 2,000 feet tall instead of 500 feet tall, and
wider because it's got actual rooms.
Not wider. I would say just the opposite. Much more U-shaped. I don't think this has gone into the development process, but it's attracting a lot of attention. Architectural Digest wrote about it with the headline, a skyscraper that would ruin New York City's skyline. Actually, when you look at the renderings of it, it's slim and elegant, and it's completely different. You know, it looks like something out of a futuristic movie. I disagree. I think it would brighten New York City's skyline in a way nothing has. So I just wanted to put, in case it happens in the next 10 years. I just wanted people to say,
you heard about it first here on the Jeff Calkins Show, Fish on Friday on Tuesday. But I want to get to the, we had Robert Irwin Jewelers spot. I did a Robert Irwin Jewelers, and I tell people, and I mean it, if you're thinking about getting engaged, head into Robert Irwin Jewelers. But you have the tale of an engagement ring dispute that has been unfolding in our country. Please tell us about it.
This is really a story of the ages. Let's just ask the question. Whether you play Believe It or Not with Jeffrey, what if the engagement goes south, who should get the engagement ring? Do you have a thought about how that should go?
My theory is it is a gift, and there is no legal requirement that she or he, whatever, that it be returned to the giver. There is no legal requirement that it be returned.
But
hold on. Let me finish. Okay. But if you're a decent human being, you should give it back. There's no legal requirement. You're not legally bound to marry someone because they gave you a ring, even though it was in the expectation of marriage. I don't think there is a legal obligation to return it, but I do think there is a moral obligation to return it. Go ahead.
Or even one down from moral. It's just an ethical way to behave, right?
It's a decent way to behave. Yes. You don't keep the damn ring. He gave it, so you'd marry him as a testament to your love. The love is gone. Give it back. Now, I don't think that's true. Right. If I gave someone a ring, whatever, if you're dating someone, you give them a ring for Christmas, and then you happen to break up 6 months later, you don't have to return that.
But an engagement ring,
you do. Yes.
Yeah. My wife said exactly that. Any decent person who was asked to get married and received a ring would return the ring if the engagement ends up.
And if they bought it from Robert Irwin Jewelers, they could use the meant to be guarantee and they could bring it back within 365 days and get complete money
back. Get their money back. Exactly. So this is about an engagement between Bruce Johnson and Caroline Citino in Massachusetts. They dated for a year. Then he bought her, I hope you're sitting down, a ring from Tiffany that cost $70,000.
Okay. That's a lot. That's a lot.
I've never even bought my wife a car that cost $70,000.
You bought her a house that cost $70,000, though.
Yeah, she would point out that we bought that together.
Collectively bought it together.
Right, yeah. But we've never, the last three cars we've purchased together have not cost $70,000. A $70,000 engagement ring. They were engaged for less than a year, and Caroline, according to court testimony, started to be critical and unsupportive of Bruce. And then you know what Bruce did? What would you do in that case when your fiance is starting to be
he went and found another Tiffany.
No, he went and found her phone and read her text messages.
What's going on? Okay, and what did you discover? She was having an affair.
It's unclear. The court testimony doesn't make it clear how much of an affair it was, but this went all the way to the Massachusetts Supreme Court. She would not give the ring back. Overturned a 65-year-old Massachusetts ruling, which previously said you had to decide who was at fault before the ring was returned. In Massachusetts, they now have a no-fault engagement. The person giving the ring gets the ring back no matter what.
There is a legal obligation to give it back. Wow.
Because the principal, quote-unquote, the principal purpose of an engagement is to test the permanency of the couple's wish to marry. The engagement ring is inherently conditioned on the marriage. In Massachusetts.
I like the law, honestly. I think that's correct. Putting a little teeth behind the moral obligation.
Yes, I think it's okay. I mean, you know, a $70,000 engagement ring. Holy mackerel.
So where does it stand now?
She's given back the ring. It's all over. This is state law. You can't appeal this. You can't appeal this to Roberts and Kavanaugh and
It's done. He had to get back the ring. Good. Justice prevailed. There, we're going to end the show on a very happy story, ladies and gentlemen. He gets the ring back. She can go off and do whatever she likes, ringless. Charles, we got to. Jeffrey tells me we got to get out of here, so we got to get out of here. You can follow Charles Fishman on Twitter or X at C Fishman. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason will be joined by Jessica Benson, Jason Fitz. Tim Murray joins me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow for an hour. Work is done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.